This is Fresh Air. America hasn't won its war on drugs. David Feingold's movies show some reasons why. Feingold is an anthropologist turned filmmaker who has been studying the international drug trade since the mid-60s. He's made movies about the Golden Triangle in Southeast Asia, where opium poppies are grown to make heroin. With his partner Shari Robertson, he gained rare access inside Cambodian territory controlled by the Khmer Rouge. For their latest film, they went down to Peru to study the coca economy and its connection to the Maoist guerrilla group known as the Shining Path, or the Sendero Luminoso. Part of the movie takes place in Washington, D.C., as congressional committees debate America's drug policies. That film, Washington, Peru, We Ain't Winning, will be shown on many public TV stations in January. The head of the Shining Path was imprisoned 2 months ago, but many experts agree that doesn't mean the end of the group's violence and power. Yesterday in Peru, elections were held for a new Congress. The elections were called by President Fujimori 7 months after he suspended the Constitution and disbanded Congress. His party is projected to have won a majority of seats. I asked David Feingold how he interprets the election.
The elections in Peru are an attempt by President Fujimori to reestablish the legitimacy of his government. The main opposition parties did not participate. The most recent information is that President Fujimori probably has a majority of 43 seats out of 80. This election was to establish a constituent assembly to rewrite the Constitution. The president has also said that if the Congress doesn't go along with him, he very well might dissolve it again.
So I know there's somebody in your film who says we elect a dictator every 5 years in Peru, and people inside and outside the country confuse that with democracy. Do you agree with that perception?
Essentially, yes. That was Hernando de Soto, who has very clear insights into Peruvian politics. What I think is the important point is that this election does not reestablish democracy in Peru. What it does is create the facade of democracy. Now, there is a possibility that President Fujimori will go ahead and further democratic reforms, but those reforms are not present now.
Let's look at what's happening now in Peru might affect what's happening in the United States, and I think the United States' kind of main interest in Peru has to do with the growing of coca and the amount of cocaine that really originates in Peru. What is the United States up against in Peru?
In Peru, the United States is up against what is essentially a virtually impossible situation. Peru produces 60% of the world's cocaine. In declaring war on drugs, and the United States has declared various wars on drugs, the first one was under Nixon, none of them have been successful. The problem is that it essentially says, all right, we can't solve our problem here at home. So even though our police can't clean up the problem, we're going to expect the Peruvian police, the Colombian police, the Bolivian police, the Thai police to solve our drug problems overseas. It's something that sounds very appealing in Washington. There was a very good example. There was a man who testified before Congress who said, there are only three plants in the world that cause all the drug problems. You get rid of those three plants, coca, opium poppies, and marijuana, and you solve the drug problem. Well, in fact, that's not the case, but more important, you can't get rid of those plants.
Let's look at why. Now, a lot of the Peruvian economy in the countryside has really become built around the drug trafficking.
Well, there's two things. First of all, coca has been essential in Peruvian culture. The first archaeological finds of coca were around 1800 BC. So there is coca that is used for chewing by many of the Indian highland populations. Coca tea is widely served in Peru, and people use it without any ill effects. That's not using cocaine, that's chewing coca leaf. In addition to that, the commercial production of coca for cocaine really has only taken off in the last two decades. And essentially it was when people in the upper Huallaga Valley found that they couldn't grow anything else and get it to market. To understand why coca is so important, you have to understand a couple of things. First of all, you can grow coca on land you can't grow anything else on. Second of all, you can get between 4 and 6 crops a year. What you do is pull the leaves off. That's the crop of the plant. Thirdly, it's a very hardy plant. In other words, with the exception of a fungus that sometimes attacks it, once the coca plant comes in, you don't have to worry a lot about it. There's also drawbacks to it. Once you grow coca on land, you basically can't grow anything else for 10 years. So
that's a disincentive to change right there.
Now, in addition to that, the drawback of coca is that it comes with violence. On the one hand, the good point from the farmer is the market comes to you. You don't have to worry about carrying your potatoes or whatever it is that you're growing down to the market in town. The guy who's going to buy the coca comes directly to you. The drawback is that that guy is often either a Colombian trafficker or working for a Colombian trafficker, and he says to you as a farmer, we expect you to produce so much coca. If you don't, we're not only going to kill you, we're going to kill your family. Now, what happened was that the Shining Path, and also, to complicate matters, another revolutionary group, the MRTA, came in and said to the farmers, look, we'll protect you against the police, we'll protect you against the army, and we'll bargain with the Colombian traffickers to get a higher price for your crop. In return for this, give us a tax on the crop, 10%. Well, if you can get 25% higher for your crop and get protected and you have to pay 10%, that's not too bad.
Okay, so we have this system in which you have a whole economy built around growing coca. You've got the Shining Path making its profits off of it, too, and getting a tax in return for protection. Now you have the United States coming in trying to eradicate coca. What was the United States, what has the United States policy been? What is has its approach been to trying to eradicate coca in Peru?
The initial approach was to pressure the Peruvian government to cooperate in eradicating coca. This was first done by hand. It was then there were tests of herbicides. These were notoriously unsuccessful. It didn't work. What it did do was allow the Shining Path to become established, and also it spread coca cultivation to new areas. The Americans established a base called Santa Lucia in the upper Huallaga Valley. This is a relatively small base. I believe they have about 10 DEA agents there, who are very brave. It's a very, very dangerous area. The problem is they can't solve the problem. Most people don't realize how big the Huallaga Valley is. It's three times the size of El Salvador. It is not something that you can go in with a military force and solve the problem. The other thing is there are approximately 1 million people who earn their living from the primary production of coca. If you have 1 million people as your enemy, you're not going to be able to do the job. Essentially, the only possible solution, which is what the Peruvians have been saying, is to be able to undertake economic development in the valley, which will provide the farmers with reasonable alternatives. Those reasonable alternatives do not always have to provide an exact dollar-for-dollar basis for their income. If you can also provide services and, again, protection and order, many of the farmers have said that they would be willing to do something else. The problem is right now, many of the farmers feel they are caught between the guerrillas on the one hand and the army and the police on the other. In the film that Shari Robertson and I did that you've seen, we were up in the mountains and we were speaking to coca farmers. One of the men who was working in the field said to us, we asked him, were you bothered by the police or the army? He said, well, the army comes through, occasionally they beat up the owner of the field, and they take their share, and then they leave. So for many of these people, they do not trust the authorities with good reason, and they are victims. And one of the things that was pointed out many years ago in a congressional report, which is still true today, is that the drug trade, whether it's the opium trade or the coca trade, has two sets of victims. It has the farmers at one end, and it has the junkies at the other. And everyone else in the middle is making out like bandits. The bandits make out like bandits. The street dealers make out like bandits. And also the bureaucrats do well, not because they are corrupt for money, but because they get rewarded with higher budgets because there is a problem.
If you're just joining us, my guest is David Feingold, and he has produced a new movie called Washington, Peru, We Ain't Winning, which is about the United States war on drugs in Peru and the Shining Path's inroads into the drug economy of Peru. And that program will be shown on many PBS stations in January. David Feingold has also done several movies in Cambodia on the drug trade there and on the Khmer Rouge. We'll be back after the short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is anthropologist David Feingold, who's made many movies on the drug trade in different parts of the world, and his latest film is about the drug trade from Peru. You have compared the Shining Path to the Khmer Rouge in terms of its structure and its guerrilla operating style. You spent a lot of time in Cambodia. You've made several films there, and you filmed the Khmer Rouge. You were actually able to talk with members of the Khmer Rouge, which is a very difficult thing to do. Yet you were telling me before we started this interview that filming in Peru was really more dangerous for you than filming in Cambodia in Khmer Rouge-controlled territory. What was so dangerous about Peru?
Well, I think, let me take the first part of that question of how there are similarities. Both the Khmer Rouge and the Shining Path are Maoist organizations. Interestingly enough, both Guzman and Pol Pot were in China at the same time. In fact, what I'm dying to get is a picture of Pol Pot and Guzman having a drink together in China. So you have a strongly Maoist cultural revolution orientation to both groups. Secondly, you have a small cadre. Don't forget, the Khmer Rouge started off with three guys sitting in the jungle in 1963. You have an emphasis on discipline, and you have an emphasis on political analysis. Both the Khmer Rouge and the Shining Path believe that if your political analysis is correct, then everything else follows from that. What this leads to in the case of the Khmer Rouge is if the world doesn't respond as your analysis says it should, well, there's two possibilities. Your analysis is incorrect, which is not an acceptable point of view, or there are traitors.
And you can kill them.
And you can kill them. And one of the Khmer Rouge slogans was to keep you is no benefit, to destroy you is no loss. One of the current Khmer Rouge slogans is we will grind the men for fertilizer and keep the women for reproduction. So what you have is the use of intimidating violence, but even more the use of indoctrination. And the Shining Path takes the point of view that everyone but them has sold out. The Russians sold out, the Chinese sold out, the North Koreans sold out. They sort of think the Khmer Rouge were all right, but they got a bit slack.
Your film is really about why it's so difficult for the United States to be at all effective in Peru in stopping the growth of coca. Do you have any hopes that the United States can control either the drug trade or, you know, the entrance of drugs into the United States, or to control the use of drugs in the United States?
Having worked on this problem for a very long time, I first started to work with opium growers on the Thai-Burma border first in 1964. I'm not at all optimistic. I have seen many wars on drugs. When I first started to look at Burma, Burma never raised more than 400 metric tons of opium. At the end of the United States-supported suppression program in Burma, they raised over 1,600 metric tons of opium. That makes it the most successful agricultural development program undertaken any place in the world. So I'm not particularly optimistic. I think that a sane drug policy means that you have to confront realities. And the realities are this. We cannot solve the drug problem overseas. No matter how many acres we spray with herbicides, no matter how much we try and say we're against drugs and we want every government to be against drugs, we're not going to solve the problem that way. I think that one of the things that I understand the Clinton administration has said it's in favor of is treatment on demand. In other words, the only point of enforcement is to force people into treatment. The worst scandal is if somebody wants to get treated and can't. Secondly, basically prevention is the only thing that will work. But prevention is very difficult. What is more, it is very difficult to measure. And this, in bureaucratic terms, is extremely difficult. You can't show that a dollar spent on prevention has a dollar's worth of prevention results. That's very difficult. It's very difficult to measure non-events. So that part of confronting the drug problem is to say, we cannot have a drug-free society. There is basically no drug-free society in the world. What we can do is try to ameliorate the costs of drugs, to do away with open-air drug markets in neighborhoods, which have a lot of costs for the people in those neighborhoods. Kids get shot. People are afraid. All sorts of things that go with that. We can push education as strongly as possible. We can push treatment as strongly as possible. Now, that's a very pessimistic view. But sometimes I think that you have to take that sort of view before you can start to say, all right, let's look at things we can try and see if we're going to make the situation better, not worse. It's very easy to make it worse.
David Feingold, his latest film, Washington, Peru, We Ain't Winning, will be shown on many public TV stations in January. This is Fresh Air.